Chapter 44. The Galactic Key was a forbidden tool. It was a piece of technology that set our alien masters apart from all the lowly beings that eked out a living along the rim of the Empire. The key could enable or disable any Imperial-approved alien-made device. Anything that was built by one world for use on another had to include a bypass system that only the Galactics were supposed to be able to use. Physically, the key didn't look like a key. It looked more like a seashell. But that appearance belied its power. In the Galactic Empire, any technology that was worth having was traded between worlds. Once a given star system exhibited that they had the best version of that item, such as a snap rifle, revival machine, or even a starship, they had the exclusive rights to market it in their region of the Empire. That was all well and good, and these simple trade laws made the Empire work even with thousands of diverse cultures. However, the races known collectively as the Galactics were special. They lived in the core systems, and they were our masters. To maintain their dominance, they liked to keep a few tricks up their sleeves. One of these tricks was their keys. Using a key, a galactic like one of the Magua could bypass security and operate anything they liked, even if they didn't own it. That meant they could board a starship like Minotaur at will, or even fire her guns if they felt the urge. Looking down at Galena's dead body, I couldn't help but wonder, could she have the key on her?
"Oh, for God's sake, McGill," Keevy said with her hands planted on her hips. "Don't tell me you're losing it over this woman's dead body. You've seen me dead often enough."
Carlos chuckled.
"Keevy's right. I've never seen you look this broken up over her corpse, not even when it was fresh."
Keevy slapped him, and then she glared at me. I said, trying to think. The trouble was, I couldn't tell them about the key. They didn't know it existed. It was a secret that only Claver, Turov, and I shared. The reason I was staring at the corpse had nothing to do with grief. I was wondering if Galena had died with the key on her person. Had she sent me here, hoping I'd find it for her? If that was the case, why hadn't she told me that was the nature of my mission? Uncertainly, I leaned over and began to search her pockets.
"This is disgusting," Keevy
said, misinterpreting my actions. "Shut up, specialist," I said. "I'm trying to see if she has the activator for the dragon on her."
"You don't need that," she snapped. "The dragon will recognize you. It's got a computer inside, you know."
Then I found it, a bulge in her left hip pocket. Fishing in there, I tried to pull it out while hunkering over her body to hide what I was doing. The damn thing was stuck in her pocket.
"McGill, you're mental," Keevy said.
She stalked away, but Carlos hung around.
"You want me to get you to a room?"
he asked. "Shut up, man," I said. "I've got special orders."
"I bet you do."
"Give me your knife," I said.
"Sick puppy," he said,
but he handed me his belt knife anyway. I slashed Galena's hip pocket open and immediately saw the problem. The key was a small device, but she'd secured it in her pocket in a pouch of some kind. It was tied down so she couldn't lose it accidentally. I cut the cords and then I stood up, thinking hard.
"What's that thing?"
Carlos asked.
"Nothing. Shut up." "That's like the third time you've told me to shut up in the last minute. I think you're trying for a record."
"Why aren't you shutting up then?" Frowning at me, he watched suspiciously as I climbed into the dragon and closed it up behind me. Sure enough, Turov had turned on every piece of security the vehicle had. I was forced to provide voice samples, a password, and badge identifications. Even then, the engine wouldn't turn over. She'd set the dragon up to operate only for her. Cursing, I looked out the front visor at my troops. If I climbed out now in defeat, I'd have to face even more probing questions. My squaddies weren't very obedient outside of a battle, and they weren't dumb either. They knew something odd was going on.
then I remembered the key. Making doubly sure the tiny cockpit was sealed, I took the key out of its pouch and touched it to the console. I wasn't sure it would work. I knew the dragons were Dust World's product, and they were trying to sell them to other planets, but they hadn't gotten a full patent on them yet. Still, if they wanted to get approval at all, they would have to have the big hydrogen-burning engine thrummed into life. Smiling, I knew I was in business. My troops had been standing around outside the dragon looking up at me sourly, but now that the machine had come to life, they retreated rapidly. That was a good thing for them because I had some walking to do. Not 3 minutes later, I was in the primary passages on my way down to Blue Deck. In my wake trotted a dozen soldiers like baby ducks following Mama.
"McGill," Graves called, his signal weak and crackling. "Toro is still requesting assistance. Get to Blue Deck immediately."
"We're on our way, sir," I said. "We've got a dragon with us, too."
"A dragon? Oh, right. Turov keeps one up there, paranoid woman. Well, you may have to use it. Toro made some kind of strange report about finding a lot of bodies. Now she's not responding to my calls."
My good mood evaporated. Graves had a way of making that happen. We hadn't seen a body except for Turov's, and she'd been sealed up in a dragon. Why would there be a lot of them on Blue Deck? I couldn't think of a pleasant reason.
"On it, Centurion," I said. "Proceeding to the first hatch."
To control a starship, there were really only two zones that were critical. Engineering was one, since you couldn't fly the ship without controlling the drives. Gold Deck contained all the piloting and navigational equipment, not to mention sensors, making it the second most important target. There were, however, two other regions that any sane commander wanted to capture before he tried to fly a ship anywhere. There was the tactical control room, which operated the broadsides, and Blue Deck. One might think that possessing what amounted to an advanced medical facility wouldn't be at the top of the priority list, but it was. The revival machines were there, and they were the most valuable equipment aboard any Legion ship. To begin with, they cost almost as much as the starship itself, but that wasn't the only reason they were prized. They also decided who lived and who died, literally. In any struggle to capture a ship, they had to be secured. Hatches led deeper and deeper into Blue Deck, and they were all blown and hanging wide. The deck was pressurized and heated, but we didn't feel like removing our helmets, even though our instruments said the air was safe enough to breathe. In fact, it registered as warm and radiation-free. That was probably because the entire deck's air volume was exchanged, heated, and filtered every 3 minutes during normal operations for safety's sake. But I didn't trust the atmosphere. Just because the atmosphere indicator lights were green didn't mean they were going to stay green. We kept our helmets sealed just in case. The first sign of trouble came in the form of three floating dead bodies. There was no active gravity here on Blue Deck, and we'd seen a lot of empty suits. But these three weren't empty.
"Am I seeing this?" Carlos asked. "The limbs on those suits. Where are they?"
He was right. They'd been torn off, plucked free. They were floating torsos with helmets attached, but no arms or legs.
"Squad at alert," I said. "Toro! Adjunct Toro, are you here? Veteran McGill reporting. I brought a squad to render assistance. Come back, please."
There was nothing but a gentle hiss in my headphones. The bodies were freshly killed. That much was obvious. Red blood ran from the missing limbs and pooled on the walls, ceiling, and floor, in the odd way that liquids spread out in zero-G.
"McGill to Graves," I said, but I didn't hear a response. "McGill to Graves. I don't seem to have you on my active contacts list anymore, sir."
Nothing came back from him either.
"We're in some kind of communications blackout zone, McGill," Keevy said. "Nothing is working on my kit either. This smells like a trap to me."
Roger that. Circle up tightly on my tail, people. Toro didn't have a dragon. We might... That was as far as I got before we were attacked. I'll be the first to admit that I was surprised when our foes finally showed themselves. In fact, I gave a shout of horror and dismay that was almost as high-pitched as the noises made by the rest of my squad. We'd been expecting plants, maybe those walking tree things we'd seen before on the ship and later down on Death World. But that wasn't what came at us. Instead of acid-spitting trees, we were assailed by the bodies of our own dead. They didn't look exactly like our people anymore, but we could tell that there was human flesh and bone mixed in with the horrific things that launched out of every door, every closet, and every alcove of Blue Deck to overwhelm us. These things were strange. As they flew toward us, I could clearly see they had vegetation sprouting out of them every which way. Orange floating sensory bulbs drifted around them like flowers. Tubers had lengthened the feet, turning them into gnarled, root-like masses. Twisting vines came out of their mouths and eye sockets. Sometimes they even stuck out in between exposed gray-white ribs. It was disgusting and dangerous all at the same time. Some of these monsters were armed. They carried our own rifles, randomly folded into shotguns or automatic carbines. These weapons sprayed explosive bullets at an alarming rate. They shot their own kind as often as they hit us, but they outnumbered us in the extreme. My squad opened fire in return. The carnage was terrific. We were all clenching our teeth and squeezing our triggers. I lofted two grenades from my dragon's chest cannon straight down the corridor ahead of me. These flashed and blasted apart the reconfigured bodies, but more kept coming. We shouted until we were hoarse. We fired until our magazines ran dry. In the end, I let my last surviving troops fall back and run for the exit to contact Graves and tell him what we were up against. But my dragon didn't retreat. I marched it forward, breathing in hissing gasps between my teeth as I squelched through hundreds of floating dead things. Using grippers, I kept tearing their flesh apart until they were all destroyed. Every last one of them. Then, when it was over, I climbed out of my dragon and opened my visor just long enough to barf on the floor. I told myself the stink had overwhelmed me. But I knew better.